play. Well, greetings one and all. It's time for another edition of Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air radio network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm Bonner Spring, and today I'm speaking with Jody Millman, the multi-award-winning author of the Queen City Mystery Series. The first three installments in this true crime-inspired series are The Empty Kayak, Hooker Avenue, and The Midnight Call. Great titles. Jody is also an attorney, a reviewer for Book Trip, and the host and producer of the Backstage at the Bardavon podcast. And very importantly for us today, she's the creator of the Writer's Law School. Jody lives with her family in the Hudson Valley, where she is at work on her next legal thriller inspired by local true crimes and the law. And I'm so happy to welcome you to Crime Wave, Jody.
Hey, Bonner, great to be here. Thanks for having me on Crime Wave.
Oh, I was really looking forward to this. You know, I'd like to start, that last thing I mentioned, true crimes and the law, I'd love to know more about that. Could you tell us how you got the idea for the Queen City Mysteries?
Well, you know, it's what's interesting is that I live in Poughkeepsie, New York, which is about an hour and a half up from New York City. And it's a small community, an idyllic community on the Hudson River, but we had this dark underbelly of crimes. And for some strange reason, I was inspired to tell my stories because I have a personal connection to each of these crimes. In The Midnight Call, for example, which was my debut novel, the story is inspired by a gentleman who was my history teacher in junior high school, who subsequently went on, had a psychotic break, and murdered a kid that was trespassing through his yard late one summer night. This happened about 10 years after I'd graduated from high school and right when I graduated from law school. So that was a story that was always kind of in my mind. You know, if I ever write a novel, that was the one that was calling to me. And Hooker Avenue, which was my sophomore novel, was a story that literally fell on the front steps of my law office. Because in 1995, my business partner and I purchased a building that had been abandoned and had become a congregating place for prostitutes. And well, it was a difficult situation. You know, the girls were very nice, but they kept soliciting our clients as they were coming into the building. So we kept calling the police saying, look, can you help us? Look, can you help us? And eventually the girls started disappearing. And we came to find out 3 years later that a serial killer named Kendall Francois had been stopping by our office, soliciting these women, taking them back to his house and doing his thing with them. And then they never saw the light of day again. So, I mean, those are two stories that definitely I had a personal connection to and felt that I had to tell. The first one was about what happens when a teacher kills someone, especially a young student. The second one is more about giving voice to the young women who disappeared and what happened to them. Mm-hmm. So it was always, for me, it's always about the survivors of a crime. And The Empty Kayak, I had more of a tangential relationship to it because in real life, the woman who was the alleged killer was engaged to a friend of mine before she was engaged to the person that ultimately died in a kayaking accident on the Hudson River. So, I mean, I've been related to all these crimes, and it's just, I don't know if it's me, I don't know if it's the water, I don't know what it is.
Poughkeepsie.
Different stories.
Who knew? I mean, that's wild. I said in your bio that you're at work on a new one, and honestly, we'll talk about that later, okay? But it's like, no, I don't know if I want you to write another book.
Well, this one's different. This one's going to be a little different. So okay. We can talk about that.
That makes me feel a little bit better. I mean, yeah, like, you know, Poughkeepsie, who knew? I mean, I've driven through there, but okay. It's a very great setup for a series to have the true crime connection in there. Mm. Now I want to change. Let's see. Do you change horses in the middle? I have no idea what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something different. Well, the other important reason that I invited Jody on Crime Wave was to highlight the work she does via the Writers Law School to educate authors about legal matters. Jody has been helpful to me personally. And so I know she's good. I know she knows what she's talking about. I really appreciate that. So I've got a couple of questions today that deal with some of the more longstanding and procedural aspects of becoming published. But some questions came in about that brand new elephant in the room, artificial intelligence.
Ooh.
Yeah, and its impact on everything. And I'm so happy to know that we're going to get a little bit of more information about that. I'm going to feed you the questions, Jody, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you take it over. Let's see. Number one, let's start out simple. Do I need to register my copyright with the Copyright Office?
You know, this is the number one question that I get. You know, whenever I go to conferences, people know that I'm an attorney. They come up to me, do I have to register my copyright? Well, under the law, you don't. From the moment that you create a piece of a work, you know, or you do paint a painting or take a photograph, the law, the copyright law provides that you have automatic protection under the law. However, if you intend to enforce your rights, which means if someone infringes, you have to have that little magic certificate from the Copyright Office. It's not an onerous procedure. You can do it online at www.copyright.gov. All of the information is there. It's only $45. You submit your application and bingo, you know, it usually takes about 12 months for you to get the certificate. But if you do it online, you can get a very nice little receipt that shows you know your rights. And that should something happen in the meantime, you can go ahead, either go to court or go to the brand new copyright tribunal, which is kind of a small claims procedure, which I think most of us would probably take advantage of in the event that we were infringed on our copyrights.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that. Thank you. So how long does your copyright last and what protections do you get with a copyright?
Well, let's talk about how long a copyright lasts first. First of all, it's for the life of the artist plus 70 years. And what that means is that it is part of your estate. So, you know, it should be your copyright certificate should be kept in a safety deposit box along, you know, with your with the title to your car and the title to your house, because this is something that continues on after you're gone, life of the artist plus 70 years. Now, what is a copyright? A copyright really, if you think about your work as being the trunk of a tree, there are branches that come off that trunk. One is the right to copy. In other words, if you write a story and you want to go ahead and put it on Amazon, you have the right to go ahead and have people make copies of it. You have the right to display it. If you have a cover for your artwork and you want to be able to display it, you have the right to display. You have the right to reproduce, as I said. You also have the right, it's called derivative rights. And, you know, when you look at books, for example, let's take a Karen Slaughter's Will Trent as an example. She's made a lot of money from the books, but now one of the derivative rights is a television show. So those are things that flow from your original work. You know, it could be a video game, a TV show, a movie, like Karen Dion's The Marsh King's Daughter. All of those things are covered by their original copyrights and protected under their original copyrights. So it's not just the right to, print a book. It's all of those things that come off those branches that come off of that original work.
So listening to you, I'm guessing that if I had high expectations for what my book might bring in, I would be in good shape getting a copyright when I can.
Yes. You know what?
But it's not necessary.
Yeah. People also ask me, when is the best time to get a copyright? Do I do it with my first draft? Do I do it before I go to publication? Do I do it after the book is published? Now, I have a tendency to be a little paranoid. Maybe that's because I'm an attorney, but I always send my first draft into the Copyright Office. So I know that it's protected. Then again, after it goes to final publication, I will then file a second application, which covers the derivative works, which covers anything that's changed from my original story. Because, you know, when you write the first draft, it's not going to be, odds are it's not going to be the same as what goes to publication. This way you're covered. You're really covered. But It really is. It's an essential tool for protecting our rights. And I mean, I've spoken to people that have never applied for copyrights, and I think that's foolhardy at best. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that. Another question that came in: can I use the names of people, song lyrics, brands, or titles in my manuscript? How specific can you get?
And this is the second most popular question that I get. And let's take the easy one first. Song lyrics, absolutely not. You have to get permission from the copyright owner of the song. Okay, you have to get permission to use lyrics. Titles, you do not need permission to use the title of a song or a book in your work. Okay, that's, you can go ahead and do that. Brands, unless you are saying something disparaging about a brand, which is something I do not recommend, you can feel free to name those Oreos or that iPhone in your book. You know, people do ask me that. I mean, as long as you don't say I ate the cookie and then I was violently ill, you know, as long as you don't disparage the brand, you're free to use the brand. And people is a much more complicated issue. First of all, people ask me this in the context of a memoir. I'm writing a story. I want to tell what happened with my Aunt Susie. Well, get Aunt Susie's permission. Don't name anybody without getting their permission. I mean, that's really the bottom line, especially if it's a public figure. If it's a public figure, sometimes you can fudge because the law pertaining to public figures is a little bit more gray. They would have to prove malice, that you told things about them that weren't true, that you knew about, or you told secrets that they told you. That area is a little more gray, but certainly if you're going to talk about, you know, your grandchildren, or you're going to talk about your best friend, do yourself a favor and get them to sign a release.
That's really interesting. So I don't write memoir, but I can easily imagine trying to write about someone I know who's already passed away. How does that work? You can't get permission, Jody.
Well, you know, it depends on the state. Because in New York, there's what's known as a right of privacy. And that sometimes in some states, the right of privacy, which is the right to use your name, likeness, and, you know, things related to that. It ends when the people's lives die. You know, for example, Jimi Hendrix or Elvis Presley, that ends. The right of privacy ends. However, some states like New York have extended that right of privacy where it's a person like Elvis Presley or John Wayne, you know, where the people had a value to their likeness. So wow. I hope I answered that question.
But. Yeah. Oh, no, that it is. I understand that these questions, you're an attorney from New York, but we've got people in California listening, and I guess the laws are going to be slightly different everywhere else. Yes. I actually thought of something that's not on my list to ask you, but I want to feed it in. The life of the artist plus 70 years. What does an author have to do to have what's it called when you have someone who's responsible for your works after you're dead? There's a word for that, Jody.
Yeah, an estate, an administrator. Yeah, yeah. Your estate should provide for that. Clearly, should provide for that. And what's interesting is, for example, I was doing some research and I wanted to do a quote from Robert Frost. Now, Robert Frost's estate still has licensing for his works. His works have not yet entered, most of them have not yet entered the public domain. And that's one thing I want to mention, that you can go to certain websites and look to see whether works have entered the public domain. And what that means is you're able to use the works, quote the works, refer to the works without having to get permission of that copyright owner or have to pay any royalties. So, you know, that's an important issue. Anything created before 1927 is in the public domain.
Okay, very, very good information. Thank you so much. Well, all right, let's segue over to that elephant that I talked about. Okay, first question. Can I obtain a copyright for my work if I've used AI to create it?
Well, you know, this is a huge elephant, and it's an elephant that the United States government, that the Copyright Office, that authors, that artists, and the world is really grappling with at this point. Because let's look at exactly what's going on with the Copyright Office. What they're doing is they're trying to determine if, first of all, their bottom line rule is if something is created by a human, it's entitled to copyright protection. So what does created by a human mean? Does that mean that every single word's created by a human, or that you've had input from artificial intelligence? So let's say that artificial intelligence has helped you with your outline, or artificial intelligence program has been used to help you write certain paragraphs. What is your obligation to advise the Copyright Office that you've used, you know, that you've gone beyond the human sphere into relying upon computer-generated information? They've taken a very strict stance. If it's human, you're fine. If it's not human, forget about it. And I'll give you an example. There was a gal who created a comic book. And the comic book, her name is Cash Chinova. She wrote the text of the comic book, but then had the artwork prepared by a company called Midjourney, which is an artificial intelligence art program. The Copyright Office literally bifurcated her application and said, yes, you will get copyright protection for your text, but the artwork, because you did not create it, is not copyrightable. So you have to be very careful when it comes to submitting your work. And I learned this firsthand, because for the cover for The Empty Kayak, I used a program called DALL-E 2. And I typed in and I gave it guidance as to what I wanted, you know, on the cover of my book, a red kayak floating down a stream. Came up with amazing ideas. I narrowed it down to one, and I worked on that and created the cover that I wanted. When I submitted my copyright application, I indicated that DALL-E had been, you know, part of the creation of the cover. And they wrote me back and they said, we're sorry, we will give you protection for the text and the guts of your book, but not the cover, because it was created by a machine.
Oh my gosh.
Very careful. And now they're asking people on the application to really fess up. Did you use artificial intelligence?
That was actually going to be my next question, because, like, don't ask, don't tell, right?
Right. Well, it's machine generated, okay?
Oh, okay.
Something from scratch. And then there's machine assisted. They will give you copyright protection for something that's algorithm assisted. Like I said, if it doesn't write every single word and kind of helps you, you know, with an outline, or helps you, you know, for example, I use a program called Pro Writing Aid, which technically is, you know, artificial intelligence. If it helps me create my grammar, put the commas and the dots in the right place, then it's okay. However, if I go to ChatGPT and ask them to write a story about the first year of the life of a kid, and I haven't done anything, forget it. I'm not going to get copyright protection.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you. Okay, that helps a lot. I'm really curious to find out your answer to this last question that I've got for you. How can I tell if my work has been used to train artificial intelligence? I'm dying to know how to do that.
Well, there's a website called Have I Been Trained? And I can give you, I can let you know what that is. As a matter of fact, the information is on my website, which is www.jodymillman.com, which is a website that you can go to. And it'll tell you, put in your name, you put in the title of your book, and it'll tell you whether or not AI has used your information. Now, another thing people can do is set up Google Alerts for their books. That way, if any type of machine or robot or anybody searches your title, you'll get a Google alert. So that's another really good tool for finding out whether or not you have been used to train the algorithms.
Wow, Dave, wow. Well, what is an author gonna do if it has been used? I'm assuming, like most authors, I don't want mine used. Okay. Right. So what do you, what are our options?
Well, you know, it's right now there's some litigation that's going on. Sarah Silverman, the comedian, is involved in one litigation. Michael Chabon, George R. R. Martin, and I think it's also John Grisham. They have these the litigation that's going on. One's in California and one is in New York. And they're suing these companies, saying, "Look, not only have you been using your algorithms and you've been training them on my information, you have been generating information and books falsely under my name." And it's routinely held that it's very difficult standard to prove that your works have been harvested. It's a very high level. Have I been harvested? So, you know, right now I have to tell you, this is absolutely the Wild West. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the courts rule in California could be different than what the courts are ruling in New York. New York tends to be more liberal and more author oriented. But we don't know what's going to happen. The litigation is ongoing, but all we can do is educate ourselves. People can join, it's called the copyrightalliance.org. As a maker, you can join absolutely free, and they'll send you email marketing information about the up-to-date laws and what's going on with artificial intelligence. You have to educate yourself. I think that's the key. You really have to educate yourself. And that's kind of why I started the Writer's Law School, because nobody was out there giving this information to writers. And so that people can go to my website, again, it's jodymillman.com, and I've got a tab that's for the Writer's Law School, and I've got my calendar on there because I've got a program called Writers and AI, the robots are coming. And so people can go, they'll get more in-depth information than what we're talking about today, but it's something that I really feel that people have to educate themselves on.
Yeah. Thank you very much. You know, I have this feeling in the back of my mind that I'm going to have you on at some time in the future after the California and New York cases. So that there's some more clarity with that, because I think these are really important things that, as you pointed out, we're really just beginning to face the consequences.
Exactly.
So thank you for all of that. I'm sure there are a bunch more questions, but Jody has mentioned her website a couple of times, and you could get all the information about the Writer's Law School there. I want to circle back to Jody Millman, author, before we go off the air, Jody. I heard you're writing something new. Can you share just a little bit about your new book that you mentioned?
Yeah, it's different. I'm putting my characters from the Queen City Crimes. They're taking a vacation because I've been working with them for like 15 years already. So it's time for me to create some new characters. And I've created these characters. It's called the Lawyers Lunch Club. And it's about a group of high profile women attorneys who meet periodically and have lunch and just kind of blow off steam. But then when the statute of limitations is running regarding the death of the husband of one of their members, and that member decides to investigate to find out how her husband really died in an accident, it blows up their relationship. And we see how each one of them has had a relationship or a connection to that husband's death.
Ooh, it sounds like right up my wheelhouse. That sounds really interesting. All right, we'll have to come back and talk about that one too. Jody, I can't thank you enough. Before we go, I think pretty much everything that we need to do to find you is on your website, but do you do other social media as well?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Jody Writes, Facebook, Jody Millman. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Goodreads and Amazon. And I urge people, we're coming up or maybe by the time this has gone on, Independent Bookstore Day. So people should support their independent bookstores, whether or not it's Independent Bookstore Day. And that's where you probably find my books too. But again, anything you need to know about me is at jodymillman.com, J-O-D-E. Perfect. M-I-L-L-M-A-N.
Thank you. Thank you, because I was going to spell it out for our listeners, but if you did not. Anyhow, you're so clear and concise, and I really appreciate your explanation today. Thank you for coming in to Crime Wave, and you know, let's do this again, okay?
Thanks, Bonner, and have a great spring.
Thank you very, very much, Jody.